So that would be the first we'd be able to try to do anything with that one?
Yes, although one of our staff in the Lincoln office, Amy Buresh, is working with the vendor to get, and I may have even completed this, to get all those machines railed and to keep it current. And that doesn't speak to us trying to get the lease, but it does, you know, she's working with him on that.
Okay, and you don't know whether that actually has been completed or if it's just in the works?
I don't know. I hardly ever go up there, so. Do you know, Connie?
I don't know.
Carlos, do you go up to those machines?
No.
We're all so healthy, we. Fatosh, do you go up to the machines on fourth floor?
I'm the soda drinker.
Right, so, anyway.
Well, we can follow up with Amy and see whether that is happening, or, you know.
I'm sure it is. I mean, exactly where.
Well, I mean, you know, whether it has happened or is still happening or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else on that subject that we want to, I know that we talked about, part of Dave's message also had to do with active participation. And that the committee wanted us to know that it has sometimes felt like maybe we, rather than soliciting active participation, we just decide that something should be done and then expect it to happen. Dave and I did have some correspondence about the fact that we would encourage one another to attend our various meetings. And, you know, he wasn't able to come today, but he was at our last meeting, and we've been encouraged to come to committee meetings. If we know when they are, I think that, you know, and Pearl did mention to us the ones coming up, and particularly the one in June where Kevin Worley, who is the president of the Merchants Division of the National Federation of the Blind, that is one of the hats he wears. That meeting, I think, probably will be a lively one. And I
think. Is that going to be in Lincoln?
Yes. And I think whenever we can get to those meetings, I went to the one in September, on the 5th of September of last year, and it was interesting to get direct feedback. And I think whenever we can do that's a good thing for us to do.
I think when we discuss the vending as a focus topic, we should never just have Terry Harris. We should have representative from the vending committee. That I think was the misconnect. I thought, and I guess I now understand more of the vending committee versus just Terry Harris's role, I thought that we were talking directly to the right source, but really the vending committee is probably more the appropriate group to talk about ideas with than Terry.
Well, I think if we have both, that and make sure that we make the connection with both, you know, my assumption was that one would get in touch with the other and that they would both be here. In fact, I thought that, you know, one of the people who was here was maybe the representative from the committee. So I think we were all kind of confused about some of those things. And we can, as we go along, try to remedy those situations, and if we all stay in touch with each other, we'll do a better job of that, I think. And so, you know, we'll continue to try to invite the committee to come here, whether or not vending is a focus topic, and we can be mindful of when those meetings are, and as often as we can, if some or all of us can get to those, that would be a good thing too. Because I think that we have an open-ended invitation at this point. So now we just need to make sure we know when they are. Mm-hmm. And I think if we continue to follow up on the situation with the getting of Braille on the machines and that kind of thing, it'll be more likely to happen too. I think it's just a matter of making sure that those kinds of things are kind of in the front of people's minds rather than at the back somewhere.
Yeah, the soda machines in the State House building, they've been brailled. Now they hadn't been brailled earlier this week or last week, but they are now. So they got right on it once the matter was brought to their attention. But none of the other machines, I don't believe, have been railed yet, but that'll come.
What other machines?
The snack machines.
Yeah, and some of those really are hard to figure out a good way to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's part of the deal. It's kind of going back to that situation with the kiosk things, you know, the touch screen. You know, some of these things are more doable than others. And so if we can get done the things that are doable, then we'll be at least moving in the right direction. And then when ideas come for how to do the ones that look more or less undoable now, then I think people will be more likely to get around to it.
The real problem was we weren't doing anything, but
yeah.
Now we're doing something.
Yes.
That's the important thing.
And that is a good thing.
Thinking about ways to make it Braille rather than reasons or
why you can't.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's good. I think we're going in the right direction on that. Okay, the next item on the agenda, the questions concerning the NCBVI's transition program, that was supposed to be a follow-up from the November meeting. And the person who had raised that issue is not here, and had said that didn't send any kind of question. Said that that whatever it was that was going to be asked at that point seemed disconnected now to anything that was really happening at the moment. So, unless somebody has a follow-up or a further discussion on that issue.
It's Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to bring is, and I don't know what that other item was, so I'm not going to comment on that, but one of the areas that we discussed during the last meeting had to do with we had been doing some thinking about the wages program and whether to incorporate more of a training focus, especially on the travel area, and so I do want to update you on where we're at with that. We had a meeting with the supervisors and the deputies and the transition team, not the transition staff of the commission, and had a really good discussion about the training and, you know, the purpose of wages and just what's feasible and what's going to be effective within the context of the wages program. And what we came up with is that there really isn't, you know, intensive training like if it were 6 weeks in the center, it's 6 weeks of a job, and so there's some training opportunities for skills, but not intensive. And so we are going to have additional long canes available in case people have not been exposed to them, and the staff will let the students who come to wages know that this is another option, encourage them to try it while they're in Lincoln for the summer, and if they're interested, then they would get some, you know, instruction in the use of the long cane. As of the last meeting, you'll probably remember, we had actually been talking about mandating that for as a part of wages. So anyway, that's what we're going to do with that. And I think that'll work well as far as giving people an opportunity to learn a new technique, but not really, you know, but really leaving it to the individual's choice.
Is there any way, like, you know, the people that are coming down to that, like the weekend, you know, I mean, ideally it'd be longer, but, you know, because of cost and practicality, the weekend before, having some kind of skill training?
There is skill training at the beginning of wages. Either Carlos or Karen can explain.
What we do, this is Karen, what we do at this point in time is the students who use canes regularly, part of the ground rules are that they must use them during the time that they are at wages. The students who do not use canes, and we do have a few of those, routinely we offer the opportunity. the training that happens the first week of wages, for example, the kids get there, the students get there on Sunday, and we have a seminar with students and their parents and everybody talking about all the kinds of things that are going to happen during the week. The first actual day of wages, each student is accompanied by a staff person, and they do all kinds of orientation things. They do practical skills application if that's something that there's an obvious need for, you know, to get them familiar with the campus, familiar with where they'll be working. We work on training using the public transportation. It depends on the individual student, but it is a one-on-one opportunity, and that can be 2 to 3 days. It can be a full week. It can be longer than that if that's what we need to do, because the skill levels of our students do vary considerably. But as far as there being, we're all going to go out and work on cane travel this hour and a half, we don't do that. We incorporate that in the activities of their day and of their program on a one-to-one basis. And then throughout the 6 weeks program, we have a lot of activities that are after hours and that sort of thing. And we create the opportunity and create the situation that illustrates how best to use the tools that are available and how best to access various things.
And during those activities is when we make students understand that they need to use a, you know, better game or long game, or for that matter, even a game, because sometimes you don't want to use a game.
That's right. One of the things that we do, this is Karen again, is the last 2 years for sure, we've had a staff person come down and give a fairly lengthy seminar to the students about some of the values of using a cane, specifically how to use it, how to challenge yourself, taking advantage of opportunities to challenge yourself. Jane did it for us last year, and I've already asked her to do it this year. And that is always, seminars usually last about an hour, and I think you were there, what, 2.5 hours, Jane? It was a really long marathon seminar, but it went really well, and the students did gain a lot from that. But the day-to-day challenge of putting those skills into practice is really part of what Wages is about. It's really a neat opportunity. It is one thing to say to a student, it's really important to use the cane. It's quite another to be walking to the ball game and somebody, because they didn't use a cane, missed a curb that the other 7 students found. So, I mean, that's how we do it. It is ongoing. It isn't the training is ongoing. The discussion is ongoing throughout the whole program.
This is Dorothy. Madam Chairman, I have a question.
Yes.
To Karen. Mm-hmm. Now, you say staff people. Do you take staff people from the center, work with you, or do you hire additional staff?
The day-to-day staff for Wages are hired specifically for that period of time. And we have 7 staff members that are, or 7 temporary staff for the Wages program itself. But the one-to-one things during that first week of Wages are our regular staff. For example, Jane comes down and works with someone. Connie has done it. Literally everybody has done it. We try not to use the center staff too much because they've already got 10 people in their classes. So we do pull from staff across the state to provide that one-on-one support and training.
The additional staff, what kind of qualifications do they need?
Generally, we look for, it goes through the SOS program at Department of Personnel, and the general requirements are 2 years of post-college or post-high school education, or at least 2 years of experience, so that we're looking at people who are physically older than the students who are participating, because sometimes that gets to be a little bit of an issue. It really can be. We look for staff members who have either experience with blind and visually impaired people or who are blind themselves. And this last year we had 5 staff members who were blind and 2 who were not.
And the 2 who were not had experience working.
Yes, they had both been previous Wages student Wages counselors themselves. So, but that's what we look for. We look for somebody who has a basis of knowledge or has demonstrated a knowledge of blindness and blindness-related skills and all of that sort of thing, and we hire from there. So those jobs, just kind of an FYI, I visited with Department of Personnel last week, And the jobs, the SOS wages jobs will be posted March 5th, 6th, and 7th, and March 8th, 9th, and 10th in the Nebraskan, and also on the Department of Personnel website. And the way that you apply for those positions is to apply through Nebraska Department of Personnel, and they have an online application. Or call me if you know of anyone who's interested or whatever.
Might.
Yeah, you never know. But I do, I did last year, and I will again this year, send that email around to staff too, so that they can be visiting with folks that they know of for those positions. It is a really, really great opportunity for our students to get to know people, but it's a good job for staff too.
Does anybody have other questions? I'm glad to have that clarified as far as, you know, what was determined at the, you know, that there was a meeting and what was determined there as far as what's going to happen in the future. And we appreciate your coming and explaining it to us.
You're welcome.
Is there anything further on that issue? Okay. The next item on the agenda is the policy on serving immigrants.
That's one I wanted to discuss. I mean, you have blind people from other states who, if they want to come here, we get reimbursed from those other states. But if you get people from foreign countries, how do we get reimbursed for that? And then what kind of a policy and procedure do we have in place, or can we put in place to make sure we get some kind of reimbursement or payment for our services? You know, now in this day and age, when I heard on the news the other day, Nebraska is going to have to cut their budget by another 2.5%. We can't afford to give away free services to non-citizens.
You got that right.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Pearl.
Okay, I brought the Rehab Act. And under Section 101 state plans, this issue is addressed. This is the federal statute that we're required to follow with regard to implementing the VR program within the state. So Section 101, and it's 12, number 12, residency, is what gets the closest to addressing this. It's short, so I'm going to read it to you. The state plan shall include an assurance that the state will not impose a residence requirement that excludes from services provided under the plan any individual who is present in the state. And remember that the, you know, 80 to 90% of the funds for the voc rehab program, well, 80% of the voc rehab program within the state, and 90% of the older blind and independent living is federal funds. It is a national program, and it's true that if someone is a client of one state, they can be sent to the other state, and the other state gets paid for the services that they provide. But again, it's the wording is any individual who is present in the state has a right to apply for services, and if they're eligible, we have an obligation under the law to provide the services that meet their needs.
But see, that's very, very vague. It doesn't say anything about people from other countries.
Mm-hmm. But if they're physically present here, it doesn't really matter.
No, I don't think it does to me. It matters because, you know, our Nebraska taxpayers' dollars are going to serve other countries. We can't afford to support the entire world.
Right.
And it does, you know. we could bring all kinds, we could go to Europe and bring back all the blind Germans that we could and put them through our training center, but we can't afford to do that.
And the other issue that raised, Barb,
excuse me?
The other issue that raises, and Dorothy, you have a very valid point, is you bring in somebody from, let's say, Peru or Mexico or something like that, you have a language barrier.
This is Pearl. The comments, the sentiments that you're expressing, that I really believe is something that is, those are beliefs, you know, that many people do agree with and other people do not. My point is that the Rehab Act would have to be amended.
Act of what year?
This is always as amended by the most current. And the Rehab Act is up for reauthorization every 3 to 5 years. It goes through the House and the Senate and then conference. It is in process of being reauthorized right now, but this particular section is not one that anybody is seeking to change.
Well, my real problem is with illegals that come in, and the United States is being swamped by illegals that are coming in for these benefits. Now, if someone comes into the country legally, goes through the steps to get here legally, mm-hmm. something happens. I have no problem with that, but.
Carlos Servan, there are two things about that bill. One is, how do you ask somebody if they are illegal or not? You cannot ask that.
Sure, you can.
Well, you could, but they can tell you, yes, I'm legal. And you don't ask that.
No, they have to have
that to anybody who speaks English.
And they have to have documentation to get into the United States legally. They have to have documentation.
I know a lot of immigrants, and let me tell you, they can show you documentation.
Can be forged.
That's what I mean. But my main point is, let's assume that they are illegal. They are not going to go back to their countries, and then they are going to be a burden to this country.
Yeah.
So what is more expensive?
That's true.
Okay. Now, and then also, how many people are we serving? We're talking, like Pearl mentioned last time, maybe one. It's not really, to me, an issue regarding.
Well, it sure is to me.
Well,
because out in California and Texas, they thought, well, this isn't going to be a real problem. But they found out that it is a problem.
Well, that's one point. And like Pearl mentioned, there is another point there too.
Carlos, I would like to make a comment. Yes, you can ask for documentation to prove citizenship or if they're here legal or illegal. I work with all kinds of Hispanic people. And to even get, go apply for food stamps or welfare of any kind, they have to have like a valid driver's license, and they won't go apply for a valid driver's license because they have to have a birth certificate or some kind of documentation to prove they're here legally. And so we can ask for documentation.
This is Pearl.
Pearl?
Thank you. My understanding is that those programs have specific requirements in their law that require whatever it is. And that's fine, and that's great. That's the way they were set up. The Rehab Act is different. That's all I was going to say.
Okay. I'm going to write down that, and I'm going to email my state senators legislators, because I think, in my opinion, that needs to be changed.
And of course, it's a federal law.
Well,
Pearl, you've been on those groups with, you know, people at your level of different states.
Right.
I mean, this obviously other states deal with this far higher level. I mean, is that the consensus that the residents is pretty open ended that legal residence is not required?
It really isn't a matter of consensus or opinion or practice. It's in the law. We must assure.
Well, all the states do that.
Right. We are required by the Rehab Act, which is what gives our funding, 80%.
What is that section? Section 12.
Section 12. Well, it's number 12 of section 101. And we're required that we will not impose a residence requirement.
Yeah, but we don't need to go out and seek these people and bring them back to go through training either.
Okay.
They can seek us.
You know, I believe that Fatosh had sought the floor.
Right.
And, you know, I will make a comment after she makes hers. I have no idea what it is, but I will hold on to mine.
Thanks. This is Fatosh. I work with three other states, and the same rule applied in other, other than Nebraska, to other states, and same rule applied. It actually applied to me also when I first came to this country. I wasn't a citizen to this country, and I received services. And if we're going to ask for legal status of somebody, we should ask from everybody.
Right.
Just because I had an accent doesn't mean that I don't belong to or a citizen of this country. There are a lot of people from other countries that have perfect English and you cannot tell. So, if there's a rule, we should apply to everybody, not only the people from Mexico or somewhere else.
Yeah. It does apply. For touch, when I was hired at Sulamela Health, I had to prove, I had have three forms ID proving that I was a citizen of
But you were a staff person. That's a different issue than giving service to a group of people, which in the federal law, in the Rehab Act, it specifically said that you don't have to be a resident. And you don't have
but
to be a
resident. But it's very vague in the law. It says, it's vague.
I don't think it is vague. If it was vague, the other states wouldn't apply for it either.
I think it's very vague because it doesn't say any person.
Well, it says residence, and it would seem like that would be an issue that would be adjudicated whether or not residence means legal residence.
It's just a matter of semantics.
Residence.
Residence just means reside.
Physically here.
There's no domiciliary.
You have to be here legally. Otherwise, we'd have every blind person in the world come into the United States.
Well, the people who are here, and the person probably you're thinking about was here legally. I mean, he wasn't an illegal person. He was here legally.
Okay.
And Carlos, one more thing, Malantra.
Okay.
We don't seek or we don't go to other countries to bring people here either.
Otherwise, I would have a lot of people from Turkey, believe me.
but
you flew me back from national convention, so what's that?
I think you got the facts wrong.
Yeah.
One of the things that that I want to say somehow or another is that what we're about as a commission board for the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired is that, we, in the first place, we're not in the business of micromanaging what the commission does, but we are in the business of being, making our Commission for the Blind one of the best or the best or whatever we can do in the country, because we really live in a global environment, all of us do. People will try not to a lot of times, but usually when that happens, what happens is that the people end up with a narrowing of perspectives and even understanding of how life is wherever life is happening. I feel grateful that we don't have a certain kind of a situation that would cause us to not include people from wherever. For one thing, just at a selfish level, I think we've benefited from, two immigrants that I can think of just right off the top of my head who happen to be in here right now, who received training from somewhere. Partly it was from their own backgrounds where they came from, that caused them to come to this country in the first place. And part of it had to do with some state here in this country that invested in them. But the bottom line was that they themselves had goals that are the same as the goals that we have. They wanted to belong. They want to be part of society, to contribute, and to be part of what's going on. And, you know, for my part, I think if we get to a point, and you know, and we've had other people who have come here specifically for services. We also have people who have been here and who have gone to other places to make differences there. There are a lot of people who have been either clients or staff people of this entity who have gone someplace else and are making a mark there that still affects us, because what happens to people wherever they're from affects people everywhere. And I guess, you know, as far as the requirements that, you know, that if somebody resides somewhere, that just means that they live there at the present moment. And if they're a blind person and they live here in Nebraska and they're not being served, Nebraska taxpayers are going to spend a lot more money trying to figure out how to take care of that person, how to deal with the lack of training that person has, than the taxpayers will ever spend getting that person trained and having the person either, you know, contributing still here in this state or somewhere else that will reflect back on what's going on here. You know, I think that if we begin to think in terms of the only way that we're going to be comfortable serving somebody is if they're, you know, born and raised here or whatever, we're gonna not have a whole lot of people to deal with, and we're not gonna get the kinds of perspectives that we get from having people come from other places. And I don't, you know, I don't even have a problem with if somebody wants to come here and they live somewhere else and they think that what we have to offer is a good thing, and we can inspire that person to come and to take advantage of our training and then either be here and contribute or go someplace else and do that, I think that's a fine thing. I don't have a problem with that. The only thing that I would think would be any kind of a potential situation would be if there were two people, you know, somebody was, you know, just got here and somebody had been waiting around, you know, for a while to get into a certain part of our program or whatever. If we had that kind of a deal, then of course the person who's been waiting will ordinarily come first. Mm-hmm. But I guess part of my perspective too is that as a former staff person and as a former director of the orientation center, specifically, we had a waiting list quite often. And there would be people, you know, who would be, you know, somebody would be next in line or whatever. If for some reason the person who was next in line right at that point couldn't, when their time came, because, you know, if you're on a waiting list, you do other things in your life too. And the fact that you're on a waiting list when your time comes, or when the moment arrives where there's a place open, you may be doing something else in your life. And there were several people who did that. And so once that was happening, they then weren't available right then. If there was somebody else who was available to come in right then, you know, part of my job, as I saw it then, was to, as much as possible, have the center full. And if there was somebody who was available and they got started, and then maybe a month down the road somebody who had been on the waiting list who wasn't available right then suddenly said, oh, well, I could come now, well, you know, that spot was gone.
That's
how that worked then. And I am guessing, and I don't want to guess, and you know, Fatosha's here, she directs the center now, but I'm thinking probably that still can happen.
I think it goes back to a practical, you know, it says residence, but it doesn't, I mean, if a person was there was a warrant for his arrest, He was a fugitive from the law. We wouldn't provide, we wouldn't start him through rehab services. I mean, that's...
We wouldn't know.
Well...
Yeah, we wouldn't know, and I mean, you know, frankly...
Well, that you wouldn't, but what if you did know?
There were a few times when, you know, somebody got started, and then we did discover things about them, which sent them in a different direction. But we, what we did was to take people's word for who they are, where they're from, what the deal is with them. And if we found out something different that compelled us to do something else, well then, okay, that would change the direction. But we didn't initiate that, we didn't do that, and while that person was there, under the name and everything that we believed them to be, we served that person. And I'm frankly glad we did.
Barb, this is Connie. And I might have heard this wrong, but it doesn't say anything about being a resident or having a residence. It just says being present in the state.
This is Pearl. It actually, we have to assure that we do not establish a residency requirement.
Yes.
So they don't have to be a resident.
Not only don't they have to, but we cannot require that.
No, we can't.
The state of Nebraska, but what about the country?
Well, that comes under, I think that comes under a different aspect.
If somebody's present in this state and they want services, and we're in a position to provide those services...
But financially, we are not in a position...
Sure we are.
No, we're not.
There is a staff in place, and if there is availability of staff and that sort of thing, and the person is there and willing, that's what causes us to serve people. And I think we've had some amount of confusion possibly when we've, you know, some of these new things like the Social Security situation and all of that. That isn't an across-the-board deal. People who receive benefits at the time that they're served, like Pearl mentioned earlier just today, those kinds of people, you know, there is the potential of getting reimbursements. But I would hate to see us ever say, okay, we're going to have an order of selection in effect, even though this state doesn't have that right now for our Agency for the Blind, but we're going to create one, and we're going to see if somebody's on Social Security before we agree to serve them. We're not going to, in fact, we'd be in trouble.
Rehabilitation, I understand what you're saying there, that it is the responsibility of the rehabilitation to decide nationality or anything of that nature, just to rehabilitate a person. That falls under a different agency, controlling your borders and so forth. That comes under immigration and naturalization. So it's a different aspect. I'm opposed to giving illegal aliens anything until they should have enough they should respect our laws too. And with regard to this particular aspect, I think it just falls under a different category rather than rehabilitation.
I think served people are better off, and the place where those people live is better off when people are served. To me that's the bottom line, and I don't know. Were you trying to say something, Patoche?
No.
I wasn't sure.
Well, I was saying,
when we were talking about the whole waiting list situation, I didn't know if you had a comment.
What I can tell you that when we accept people out of Nebraska, we either need to have, that's the policy that I talked to Pearl about. We need to not have a waiting list, or need to have a place that we will be serving everybody at that point. And that's what happened when we accepted time from New Mexico, that actually right now we have three empty spaces we are waiting to fill. So we always think, and I look down the road to see if there's anybody starting even 2 or 3 months,
mm-hmm.
that we are going to serve first Nebraska citizens, and then we accept people from outside.
That's where it should be.
Mm-hmm. See, my thought is, you know, thank God we live in America and everybody has different opinions, and respectfully, Barb, I disagree with you, but, you know, I think you take care of your own family first before you go take care of everybody else's family and.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on how you define family. I guess I think everybody's my family. I guess that's how I think. Yes.
The law says that, and we happened us before, if a person comes with a Greyhound that is not a client of any other state, comes in and calls us from the bus depot, and we need to open, even they don't even have to have an address.
That's right. They're physically present in the state.
Exactly. We need to open legally their case. So it happened before.
Yes.
So that is the law.
Yes, it is. And I think the reason for that is the kind of thing that Carlos was talking about, and that you know that we've been talking about, that people who are in need of services are better off, and so is the environment in which they live, and so are the people around them, if the services are offered and provided, than if someone is not served, because a person is going, you know, something is going to happen with that person. And if it's a blind person, the Commission for the Blind is responsible for training that person. If that person is here physically.
Well, I think, though, to put this matter to rest, I mean, it goes to the statute as the statute, it's the rest's residence, and that's interesting that we learned that, because I never would have guessed it was that broad.
Question that too, you know, if it is that broad and that vague.
And that,
well, and part of that gets to that situation where the Pearl was talking about a little while ago, where, you know, you don't want to have a situation where the person falls asleep and, you know, you say, well, we can't do anything about that because it's not in there. You know, we don't want to do that when it comes to serving people. We don't want to have some kind of thing that kind of counts somebody out before they've had a chance to have a chance. You know,
well,
we ought to know about not having
changed,
a chance, because all of us have lived that life of not having a chance for one reason or another. And if we don't understand that, the idea that people deserve a chance, then I really think we need to think hard about that, because we have all lived that life in this country that we think of as the freest country there is. You know, I have never lived in another country, so I can't really presume how free or not people may be in somewhere else. From the fact that a lot of people come here and want to, I get the idea that it's a pretty good deal. But there still are things about this that where we do understand that there are still places where we don't have a chance, or where we don't, you know, and so we really need to understand that. And
well, some, you know. See, I agree with you. Everybody should have a chance, but are we the ones, you know, can we afford to give everybody, are we the ones, you know, the
sure.
Nebraska Commission for the Blind, are we the ones who's going to make sure everybody gets that chance?
I hope so.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Karen. I just have to say one thing. To me, that is so not vague.
Mm-hmm.
It is so succinct as to say, without question, we cannot deny someone for whatever artificial reason. That, to me, is not vague. That is absolutely to the point into the discussion
in
the law.
But Karen, it doesn't address.
But it does. A human being is what it is saying. We cannot make decisions arbitrarily about where they came from or even where they're going. We can do that no more than we could stand at the border and say, this state highway system was paid for by the state of Nebraska, and so you from Iowa cannot drive here. It is so clear and so succinct and so all-encompassing.
Why is this big fence built between the United States and Mexico? Yes, it does. You know, we're talking about immigration. We're not talking about Iowa, Nebraska, or Kansas.
No,
Nebraska.
But
okay.
We are talking about human beings, and we are talking about if you are at the Greyhound station in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you are a blind person and you need services, that is what we need to know. The pertinent information has been answered. You are blind. You are in Nebraska. You are specifically in Lincoln, Nebraska, which makes it Connie's district's problem or situation to address. That's what it is. You know, if we tried to say this person based on where they are on this particular time in their life, whether it be 5 years previous to where they are now, or whether it be this morning at 2 a.m., is what makes the difference.